Hello and welcome to this special podcast, Help, I'm a Blogger, Get Me Out of Here. And we're going to be looking at what happens when legal trouble strikes. And I've got with me the journalists John Slattery and Adam Westbrook. John's career began in print, and from 1993 to 2006 he was deputy editor at the UK trade magazine Press Gazette. And now he works freelance and he's one of the country's leading media bloggers. His blog, which is at johnslattery.blogspot.com, he says aims to give an independent view on media matters. And then Adam, he's one of the new breed of journalists that jumped into online very early in his career. He started in radio and worked for Bauer, CN Radio and Absolute, I believe. And in 2009 he went to Iraq following the British troops as they were preparing for withdrawal, and produced lots of multimedia content, including slideshows and video, and now produces video for the VJ movement, and is part-time lecturer and writes regularly about social and online media. So welcome. Thanks so much for coming along. So I want to ask you both about your experiences and thoughts on online media law, and I'd like to start with John first. John, you're experienced in both print and online mediums. How have your experience of media law varied between the two?
Yes, they have. I mean, obviously, as far as the journalism is concerned, you have no protection by being on a blog as opposed to being in print. But I think online, you tend to be a lot less careful than you are in print. I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One is timing, the fact that online you can stick a story up very quickly. I think there's always the feeling that you can correct it if necessary. I think in print, when you're working to deadlines, especially, say, when I worked on a trade magazine, you're working to a weekly deadline, there was a feeling, you know, you better get a response to this, you better check it out. You could say to someone, we're going to print on that page at 10 o'clock on Thursday, can you come back by then? And I think also you had perhaps, you know, a position as the magazine was known. Companies, their PR people would come back. I don't think people are quite tuned into online. They're not tuned into the fact that it's not a 9-to-5 type medium. I don't think they really understand it, and I don't think lawyers really understand it either. I think they react to online rather like it is print.
So do you think that's because they don't think that the online medium is spreading the damage so far, so that's why they don't make threats as often? Or
I think they don't know quite what they're dealing with. I think if you're dealing with a conventional print publication, you know who to contact. You know they've probably got lawyers, not necessarily in-house lawyers, but a company, a big magazine company, will retain lawyers. You know, big media companies like Farrah, they're comfortable with that. They know that if they make a complaint, they know how to word it. They know that that complaint will be passed on to the lawyers. And then the lawyers themselves will discuss it. They'll know there'll be a timetable. They'll be comfortable that they'll know the parameters. And crucially, they know that they'll get paid. There's no point spending a lot of time taking on a blogger who they wouldn't think has got any money. The fact that you've covered by insurance on big companies, they know that their work's going to be paid for.
So, I mean, say we take a story like the William Hague incident the other week, and there was a suggestion that he would take legal action if newspapers had picked up the story. But obviously Guido Fawkes was the one that ran with that. Why not go after him, the most powerful political blogger in the land?
I think there is a situation where it crosses over into print where people take it more seriously. I think they feel, well, they can maybe just say, oh, it's only a blogger. The interesting thing is that Guido Fawkes now says that he's financially quite successful. And that's not maybe a very sensible thing to say. It's rather like with Private Eye. Everyone thought the Private Eye looked such a thin magazine, looked like it was put together by a bunch of students, that there was no money. When it became clear that they actually said we put £250,000 aside each year to fight legal bills, the lawyers and actually journalists started to sue them as well. So you can become a victim of your own success. But in general, I mean, I think it's true. Most bloggers don't have any money, or they don't have a corporate business set up behind them where lawyers would be comfortable knowing that, you know, they can go to a publisher or they can go to that company's lawyers. They're a bit of an unknown, you know, who is behind that blog. You know, how do you contact them? How do you serve them with a writ? I think they're much more comfortable. They're more used to print. You know, it's more the game they're used to.
And do you think the bloggers have a responsibility to act like journalists? You mentioned earlier about sort of the deadlines, and for you as a blogger to go to the other side and get the other side of the story, and sort of right to reply before publishing.
I think all journalists you know, should strive to be fair and to be accurate. But I think there is a feeling with a blog that you can point to stuff and say, look, this has been printed elsewhere. Make your own mind up about it. I'm not judging it. For instance, I saw the Telegraph story saying there's this cabinet minister who might sue. I had no idea who it was, but I thought that's a really odd story that coming out on a Saturday, it's almost saying to the media, lay off. So you think, what's that all about? So I put that up. Not, I couldn't really check it out, but I just thought it was interesting. I think the feeling is that you can catch up with stories. So, for instance, I've run that when it became out that it was Hague. I ran something about that. When I saw people saying, you know, how terrible the bloggers had been, I'd run that. So I see it as, you know, in the parlance, it's a kind of conversation. You're not working towards this weekly deadline where you have to have, you know, both sides in the same story. You can add on it and you can build on it. But I still think that you don't want to be too reckless and just, you know, write the first piece of gossip you hear. I think you've still got to realise that, you know, you are covered by the law. Mm. You know, you haven't got complete carte blanche to write whatever you like. And also, you know, I think you know, most journalists should strive to you know, have an element of fairness and balance in stories. I think that's a good thing.
Let's bring in Adam here. I mean, you work primarily online. I think that's fair to say. And through your training, you're mixing with a lot of young journalists that are getting into the industry. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think they're generally aware of the legal issues at play and treating material journalistically online?
It's interesting. I think any young journalists you've had, who have a journalism qualification, I think, you know, they will be aware. I don't know. I mean, certainly when I trained alongside you not so long ago, online was sort of touched upon, but not really sort of delved in, because there hadn't really been much sort of case law by that point. I think there was Demon Internet was sort of the one kind of famous online case. But I think that's the problem, is there is a lack of a go-to place, I think, for example, for, you know, for actual media law, solid media law advice that bloggers can go to. So I suppose I wouldn't be too worried about qualified journalists who are sort of going into online. But the great thing about the blogosphere is that it's mostly populated by people who aren't journalists and who don't really have that training at all, who have never had a reason to come across it before.
Yeah, but they kind of have to, I suppose, when they're publishing in that way. I mean, there's obviously a lot of grey area around it as well, and especially in the sort of the comments region about whether to moderate or not to moderate your comments. What do you do with yours?
For most of them, I mean, I write, like John does, about journalism, so but I stick very much away from sort of, I suppose, news about journalism news, if you like. So, you know, most of my writing's about practical advice, so I tend not to get anything too sort of dangerous. So I usually just let my comments sort of go up. But if I did see something that was libelous for whatever reason, I would moderate it. I mean, the blogosphere aside, I know you see loads of examples where national newspapers or local newspapers have comments open and all sorts of stories. I know a local paper up in Yorkshire where I used to work about a year ago, that whenever it had any story, especially court stories, it would just keep its comments open. And so it would have a, you know, particularly horrendous court case write-up, and then it would just be completely filled with local people kind of, you know, slagging off the defendant. And, you know, us from a rival newsroom sort of watching this webpage, we're saying, why the hell are they doing that? How can they get away with it?
Well, especially when you're risking contempt. I mean,
absolutely,
that's a fairly risky game to play, I think. I mean, I think you're more protected as a blogger if you don't touch your comments, you leave them alone and you don't do anything with them. But then, you know, the feeling is that you might then put yourself in danger of publishing things that are in contempt of court. I mean, obviously depending what you're writing about, I suppose.
Absolutely. And I agree with what John says, in that, you know, the difference between a blog and a print article is that it is an ongoing conversation, and I think it can be updated, and I think it can, you know, it can be corrected as well if it needs to be immediately. There isn't that. I suppose it's interesting. I mean, maybe bloggers feel less of a pressure to go for, you know, make sure they get a right to reply if it's a particularly contentious thing, because they know that, if, you know, when, you know, I often do read articles where, especially in the tech kind of area, where someone will make a claim about a new product or a developing story, and then underneath they'll say, well, we've been contacted by you know, the person involved, this is what they have to say about it, and it's sort of an updated live conversation, which I think is what makes blogs stand out a bit from print.
So you can add to the conversation. And John, you've probably done that. Have you added to a blog post you've already put up there and then incorporated a new comment into it when you get a response? Or?
Yes, I think so. And I think the other thing is that if you see something that's interesting that's sent to you, you've got a feeling, well, you know, that's gone to other people as well. So I think the tendency is to put that up quickly, because you don't want to wait too long. And I think that doesn't really fit in with the problems when you ring a company and you want to get an answer to something. On a print deadline, fine, you can say, look, you know, we need to get an answer by 3 o'clock this afternoon or by tomorrow. That gives the PR person the time to check it out, to go to the company, to go to the MD, who then wants to see what the PR company are going to do, and then, you know, it comes back. But I think online, you don't really want to wait a day or two. You know, I suppose if something was very contentious, you would. But, you know, I'm talking about the general scheme of things. You know, where a report comes out, maybe critical of a company, I think you might say, or critical policies of, say, major newspaper groups about how they treat journalists or something like that comes out from the NUJ. I don't think you immediately think, oh, well, I mustn't put that up until I've spoken to 3 or 4 companies, because the truth is they won't come back to you. Or they won't come back to you for a long time, and you've got a good idea of what they're going to say anyway, so you just put it up. I mean, if people want to think, oh, well, you know, the NUJ would say that, that's fine. But I don't think you've got that timetable anymore that you have on print, that everyone sort of understood. And then if people didn't come back and you put, you know, they didn't want to comment, people could read into that. I think the tendency now is to put it up and then, you know, change it if necessary or add to it if necessary.
So that's not this timing, that's this culture shift. But then the other big difference, of course, is that you don't, as a blogger, you don't often have an in-house lawyer to go and check something with, and you maybe need to know your law yourself a bit more intimately, because you're not going to have someone to go to for a second opinion. So, Adam, you mentioned legal resources online. I mean, if, for example, you received a threatening letter, what would you do? Would you seek formal legal advice, do you think? Or?
Well, I think I'd probably panic, first of all, and weep profusely. But, yeah, I mean, that's the problem, is, you know, you kind of think, where would you go? I mean, I suppose I'm thinking sometimes a lot of, you know, not so much of journalist bloggers or journalism bloggers, but, you know, just individuals who've set up a blog for, you know, because it's their passion, you know, it's something they do in their spare time, or maybe even it's a campaigning thing, they're trying to get a message across. You know, they may not very well have any money, and the point, again, one of the great things of blogging is that it is free to do. Anyone can do it, but of course it means that often the people who do it don't have any money. But I think there needs to be some kind of a resource for them that, you know, where a blogger will think, okay, I've received this letter, I know where to go. And it's a website they can go to and they can understand the process. Because do you need to call in a solicitor straight away, or do you need to negotiate with the company first? And I think actually what we're starting to see as well, I think there could be a really interesting area in blogging in the years ahead, as a new kind of tool for consumer power. Because I think we're starting to see quite a few examples now where, you know, unsatisfied with customer service from a particular company, a dissatisfied customer is then deciding that, you know, a blog is a good way to publicise, you know, the problems they're having, and use that as a way to kind of to get what they want, or to shame the company. I think it does work in some cases as well when companies respond quickly to it, but it can get people into trouble as well.
It's that famous Jeff Jarvis example where he took on Dell. And it is interesting how people can do that, but obviously that kind of takes it, you know, that consumer side of things, takes it right out of journalism. It would be very interesting to see how that develops. I mean, in terms of the resource thing, the issue, I suppose, is, I mean, if on some legal resource sites like outlaw.com, you'll see a disclaimer that says this is not formal legal advice, because obviously they're putting themselves at risk if that's what people think it is. So it would be to develop something that's going to be a lot of questions to think about how you would do that and make it something that bloggers could use usefully, but then at the same time not sue if it goes all wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, I suppose you would always have to have that. I mean, even you know, financial advisors have to put things on any online stuff they do, I think, saying this is not official financial advice. Hopefully that wouldn't stop, you know, some kind of legal resource site developing. I think it could, you know, because I suppose the worry is that, you know, perhaps people are put off by saying something that they think might get them into trouble. Because they're not sure what's going to happen.
Okay, well, we're going to have to wrap up quite soon, but just on one final question, I mean, what for you do you think is the most sort of murky area of law in the next couple of years that we might see some sort of case develop around?
Well, I think consumer actually would be a very interesting one. I think we'll see more people, dissatisfied with a company and saying, right, I'm going to set up a blog and tell everyone how bad this company is. And I think often companies aren't at all prepared for that. I can give one very personal example. In fact, from my own family, my stepmom set up a blog to kind of campaign against a wealth management company. I won't say who, lest we get this podcast into trouble. That's right. She invested some money in a wealth management company, and they didn't give it back to her in the way she wanted. And having exhausted all the customer service avenues, she then set up a blog to say, "I want my money back." Within about 2 weeks, it was ranked maybe second or third in Google. And the company, having ignored her to that point, then got very scared, but didn't, as John said at the start, treated it as they would a print publication and kind of sent a letter claiming defamation. Although actually everything that she said was kind of, they could be justified as facts. So
she kept it up there?
It's still there, yeah. I think they may be trying to convince her to put it down. But at the moment, the case is all very unresolved at the moment. But I think, it could potentially be one of the early ones to go to court. So it'd be very interesting to kind of see in the years ahead, whether more people decide to use a blog to kind of get consumer power, and what companies do about that.
It'd be very interesting to see. And John, what do you think?
Well, I'm wondering that if bloggers become more successful, like Guido Fawkes, like Ian Dale, people like that, whether there will be a point where lawyers will think, well, maybe we should take them on and see. I mean, they're covered by the same laws. But I think, rather like the example of Private Eye, when they realise, well, actually, their influence, that maybe if you could stop the story there, it won't come out in other places. They might see that as important. And they might also think, well, they're actually quite well resourced, and, we will get our costs back. And I think that's would make, blogs sort of more like the established press, really.
And then we will see bloggers in the dock. Right. Thank you very much. Thank you for your time.